Chapter 8 Reacher led Chang into the silent waiting room, and they sat on a bench, side by side in the dark. Reacher said, "How would you characterize that handshake?" Chang said,
"In what way?"
"The narrative, the story, the body language."
"It looked like a junior corporate executive had been sent to meet an important customer."
"Had they met before?"
"I don't think so."
"I agree. And it was nicely done by the local guy, wasn't it? A whole subtle performance, deferential but not obsequious. Different from when he shakes his buddy's hand, I'm sure, or his father-in-law's, or the loan officer at the bank, or an old friend from high school he hasn't seen for 20 years.
"So?"
"Our local guy is a man with a wide variety of handshaking styles at his command, and we can assume he's comfortable about using all of them. It's part of his shtick."
"How does this help us?"
"I saw that guy this morning. He runs a store with spare parts for irrigation systems. I walked by his window, and he jumped and went for the phone."
"Why would he?"
"You tell me."
"How paranoid do you want me to be?"
"Somewhere between common sense and a little bit." She said,
"I would think nothing of it if it wasn't for Kiever."
"But?"
"You look like Kiever, in a general way. Maybe Kiever's been snooping around and people have been told to keep an eye out for him, or anyone like him."
Reacher said, "I wondered about that, too. Didn't seem very likely, but unlikely things happen. So I went back later to check. I asked the guy, 'Why did you react?' He said he recognized me from college football in 1986 at Penn State. Apparently there were photographs of me in the magazines. He said he didn't make a telephone call. He said, 'Maybe his hand was moving because the phone was ringing.' He said it rings all the time."
"Was it ringing?"
"I couldn't hear."
"You played football at Penn State?"
"No. I went to West Point and played football only once. Not very well, I'm afraid. I'm pretty sure I was never in a magazine."
"Could have been an innocent mistake. 1986 was a long time ago. Your appearance would have changed considerably. And you look like you could have played football for Penn State."
"That was my conclusion, at the time."
"But now?"
"Now I think he was covering his ass. He was hiding behind a bullshit story. Maybe it's a trick he learned. Don't waste time with awkward denials, but jump right in with a plausible excuse. Some guys might find it flattering. Maybe they wanted to be football stars. Who wouldn't? Maybe their heads get turned and the problem goes away. Plus, he calibrated it to make me younger than I am, which is flattering too, I suppose. I was already in the Army in 1986. I graduated in 83. The guy put on a whole big performance."
"That's not evidence of anything."
"First up, I asked him, 'Have we met?' He said no."
"Which was true, right?"
"But a guy like that, a fan who remembers college players from 30 years ago, if I had asked him if we'd met, he'd have said, 'No, but I'd sure like to shake your hand, sir.' Or as I was leaving, there would have been a handshake in there somewhere. This is a handshaking guy. It's important to some people. I've seen it before. Better than an autograph or a picture, because it's personal. It's physical contact. I bet there's a whole long list of people, when this guy sees them in the newspaper or on TV, he thinks to himself, 'I shook that guy's hand once.'
But he didn't shake yours."
"Which was a slip on top of a slip. He knew I wasn't the famous football player.
So now I'm back with your version. People have been told to keep an eye out for nosy strangers, including maybe the weird kid from this morning. Plus, no Kiever on the train. Where the hell is he? So I stayed. One more night, at least. For the fun of it.
Who was the guy in the suit
who got off the train?
I don't know. An outsider, I guess. Here to do business of some kind. Not staying long because of the small bag.
Rich, probably. People that thin are usually rich. We live in strange times. Poor people are fat, and rich people are thin. That never happened before.
Good business or bad business? Is it a coincidence the Penn State guy picked him up? Or is he also connected to whatever Kiever's looking for?
Could be either thing.
Maybe he's just an irrigation manufacturer, the CEO of a big corporation.
In which case, I think the travel would have been the other way around. Our guy would have gone to a trade show somewhere. Maybe he would have met the big boss at a cocktail reception. 30 seconds, maybe less, during which time he would have shaken the guy's hand, that's for damn sure.
I'm getting worried about Kiever.
You should, I guess. But only a little, because how bad can this be? With all due respect, this is a private investigator taking cash or grubby checks from a lone individual who may or may not be nuts. Your own words. And such a guy would always go to the cops first, after trying everywhere else from the White House downward. But apparently neither the White House nor the cops were interested. So how bad can this be?
You think cops always get everything right?
I think they have a threshold where they at least take a look. If the guy had said the warehouse was full of fertilizer bombs, I think they would have come right over. If he had said the elevators were broadcasting to his root canals, maybe not so much.
But the point is, it seems to have been one thing, and now it's another. Hence the call for backup. Maybe now it's over the threshold.
In which case, Kiever can dial 911 like anyone else, or he could call the FBI direct. I'm sure he still knows the number.
So what do we do now?
Now we go back to the motel. I need a room for the night, apart from anything else. The one-eyed guy was on duty in the motel office. Chang picked up the key to 214, as before, and waited. Reacher went through the same grudging negotiation. $60, $40, $30, $25, but not for 106. Reacher couldn't let the guy win every round. He got 113 instead. Middle of the opposite wing, ground floor, far from the metal stairs, and one away from directly under Chang's room. He asked, "Which room is Mr. Kiever in?" The clerk said,
"Who?"
"Kiever, the big guy from Oklahoma City. Checked in 2 or 3 days ago, came by train, no car. Probably paid for a week up front."
"I'm not allowed to say. It's a question of privacy. For our guests. I'm sure you understand, and I'm sure you would appreciate it if the shoe was on the other foot."
"Sure," Reacher said. "That makes sense to me." He took his key and walked out with Chang. He said, "Don't take this wrong, but I want to come up to your room."
Chapter 9. They used the metal stairs on the right-hand tip of the horseshoe. And then Chang's room was right there, 214, one door from the last room of the row, which was 215. Chang used her key, and they stepped inside. The room was like every other room, but Reacher could tell a woman was using it. It was neat, and it was fragrant. There was a small rolling suitcase with things folded tidily inside. Reacher said, "What kind of notes would Kiever carry?"
Good question, Chang said. Normally, we carry laptops and smartphones, so all our notes are entered by keyboard, which can be laborious. But you have to do it anyway, because it all has to be in the record eventually. But the point of an under-the-radar case is to stay off the record. So why do all the typing? He's probably got handwritten pages somewhere.
Where?
In his pocket, probably.
Or in his room, depending on quantity. We should check.
We don't know where his room is, and we don't have a key, and we can't get one because apparently the Four Seasons here has a privacy policy.
I think it's 212, 213, or 215.
Why?
I'm guessing Kiva made your reservation, right? He probably stopped by the desk and told the clerk he had a colleague coming in. And this clerk seems to think if you have any kind of a vague connection, then you need rooms close together. You're in 214 because Kiva was already in 213 or 215. Or maybe 212.
Why did you ask the guy if you already knew?
He could have narrowed it down some, but mostly I felt like using Kiever's name in public. Simple as that. If people are watching, then maybe they're listening, too. In which case, I want them to hear me say it.
Why?
To give them fair warning, Reacher said. Reacher and Chang walked two doors down to 212. Which was easy to rule out. The drapes were closed and the television was playing softly. Not Kiever's room. Both 213 and 215 were empty. Both had open drapes, but both were pitch dark inside. Serviced that morning, Reacher figured, and subsequently undisturbed. Law of averages said one was a vacancy and one was Kiever's, paid for but not currently occupied, due to some kind of extraordinary circumstance. The vacancy would look completely bland, and Kiever's room would show some kind of sign, however small, like pajamas sticking out from under the pillow, or a book on the nightstand, or the corner of a suitcase placed out of sight behind a chair. But it was too dark to see. Reacher said, "Want to flip a coin or wait for morning?" Chang said,
"And do what? Kick the door down? We're in full view of the office here."
Reacher glanced down and saw the one-eyed guy dragging a lawn chair across the blacktop. It was the chair Reacher had slept in, by the fence. The one-eyed guy lined it up on the sidewalk outside his office window, and he sat down, like an old-time sheriff on his boardwalk porch, just gazing. In this case, not quite at room 214. Low and a little right, which meant not quite at 113 either. Both rooms at once. Interesting. Then Reacher remembered the same chair that morning, abandoned in the traffic lane, and he glanced across at 106 and he ran the angles. Interesting. He rested his elbows on the rail. He said, "I guess whether we kick the door down depends on how urgent you feel this whole thing is." Alongside him, Chang said,
"No one gets those calls right. Not all the time."
"But some of the time, right?"
"I guess."
"So, which kind of time is this?"
"What's your opinion?"
"I'm not in your chain of command. My opinion should carry no weight," she said.
"What is it, anyway?"
"Every case is different."
"Bullshit. Cases are the same all the time. You know that."
"Cases like this are the same about half the time," Reacher said. "They fall in two broad groups. Sometimes you get your guy back weeks later, no harm, no foul, And sometimes you've lost your guy before you even knew you had a problem. There isn't much middle ground. The graph looks like a smiley face, ironically.
Therefore, the math says wait. Either we're already beaten, or we have plenty of time.
Reacher nodded. That's what the math says.
And operationally?
If we move now, we're committing unconditionally into an unknown situation against forces we have no way of assessing. Could be five guys with convincing handshakes, or 500 with automatic weapons and hollow point ammunition in defense of something we never even heard of yet.
Which could be what? Hypothetically.
Like I said, not fertilizer bombs in the warehouse. Something else. That started out weird and then suddenly wasn't. Maybe they really are broadcasting to our root canals. Chang nodded down toward the one-eyed guy, far away in his white plastic chair. She said,
"You picked the right channel to broadcast Kiever's name. This guy is in this thing hip deep."
Reacher nodded. "Motel keepers are always useful in any endeavor, but this guy is not high up in the organization. He's squirming. He resents this. He thinks he's better than all-night sentry duty, but apparently his bosses don't."
"And they're the people we have to find," Chang said.
"We?"
"Figure of speech. A leftover from the old days. It was all teamwork back then."
Reacher said nothing. Chang said,
"You stayed here.
I didn't see a gun to your head." "My reasons for staying have nothing to do with how urgent you think this whole Kiva thing is. That's a separate matter. And it's your call."
"I'll wait for morning."
"You sure?"
"The math says so."
"Will you sleep okay with this guy watching?"
"What else can I do?"
"We could ask him to stop."
"How different would that be than unconditionally committing?"
"That depends on his response."
"I'll sleep okay. But I'm going to double lock the door and put the chain on. We have no idea what's happening here."
"No," Reacher said, "we don't."
"I like your haircut, by the way."
"Thank you."
"What were your reasons?"
"For the haircut?"
"For staying,"
he said. "Curiosity, mostly."
"About what?"
"That thing with Penn State in 1986. It was really well done. It was a superb act. I'm sure he's done it before, and I'm sure he's practiced and rehearsed and critiqued himself and relived his successes in his mind, and therefore I'm equally sure it's completely inconceivable he doesn't know there has to be a handshake in there. I bet every other time he has shaken a hand, but not with me." "Why was that?"
"He made a mistake."
"No, he couldn't force himself to do it. That was my impression. Even to the point of compromising his art. He's into something, and right now it's under threat somehow, and he feels the people posing the threat are literally too loathsome to touch. That's the impression I got. So I was curious about what kind of a thing could make a person feel that way."
"Now I might not sleep okay."
"They'll come for me first," Reacher said. "I'm downstairs. I'll be sure to make plenty of noise. You'll get a head start." Chapter 10 Reacher sat in a chair in his room, in the dark, 6 feet back from the window, invisible from the outside, just watching. 15 minutes, then 20, then 25, as long as it took. The one-eyed guy in his plastic chair was a pale smudge in the gloom, about 100 feet away.
He had gotten comfortable. He was tipped back a little. He was maybe asleep, but lightly. Noise or movement would alert him. Probably. Not the best sentry Reacher had ever seen, but not the worst either. Above the guy, and to the right, up on the second floor, the center room had a rim of light around the drapes. Room 203. The guy from the train, probably. The recent arrival. No doubt unpacking his little leather bag and getting all his ducks in a row. Unguents and potions in the bathroom, some things in the closet, other things in the drawers. Although the size of the bag was a serious issue, in Reacher's opinion, it had looked like a high-quality item, well used, but not battered or destroyed. Heavy pebbled leather, brown in color with brass fitments, a classic shape, presumably formed by hinges and some kind of an internal skeleton structure, but not large. And the guy was in town for at least 24 hours, maybe more, with a bag too small for a spare suit or spare shoes, which was unusual in Reacher's experience. Most civilians carried spare everything in case of spills or changes in the weather or unanticipated invitations. 10 minutes later, the rim of light clicked off and room 203 went full dark. The one-eyed guy stayed where he was, tipped back, maybe watching, maybe not. Reacher gazed back from the shadows. 15 more minutes, as long as it took, until he was sure there was nothing doing. Then he stripped and folded his clothes the way he always did, the same pants under a new mattress, and he took a brief shower and climbed into bed. He left the drapes open and set the alarm in his head to wake him at 6 in the morning, or if there was noise or commotion in the night, whichever came first. The dawn was silent, and it was golden again, but infinitely pale. The elevators threw weak shadows long enough to hit the motel. Reacher sat up in bed and watched. The plastic chair was still there, on the sidewalk under the office window 100 feet away, but the one-eyed guy had gone. At 4 in the morning, Reacher guessed, the lowest ebb. To a couch in the back, no doubt. Room 203's drapes were still closed. The guy from the train. Still asleep, probably. Reacher got up and came back from the bathroom with a towel around his waist. He opened his window for the air and for the sound. He could hear vehicles on the wide street, regular gasoline V8s and thick tires pattering on the rail lines embedded in the blacktop. Pickup trucks, probably, heading for breakfast in the diner. People were up with the sun. He sat and watched, without coffee. He ran a pleasant fantasy through his head of calling the diner and ordering a pot from the waitress, his new best friend, and having her show up with it minutes later. Except he didn't have the diner's number, and there was no phone in his room, and he wasn't dressed. 100 feet away across the horseshoe, there was light in the office window, but no movement. Just the faded old motel, 2/3 empty, not long after dawn. He sat and watched, patiently, expecting to be rewarded eventually, and eventually he was, after almost an hour. First, the one-eyed guy came out his office door and stood and sniffed the air, the way people do in the morning. Then the guy glanced all around, at the inside perimeter of his little domain, and his parking spaces, and the sidewalk passing the first-floor rooms and the walkway passing the second-floor rooms. A leisurely visual inspection, born mostly of duty, Reacher thought, but with a small slice of pride in there somewhere.
Then the guy remembered the unexamined territory directly behind him, and he turned around to check, and he saw his misplaced lawn chair. He dragged it back to 102 and left it lined up in perfect uniformity with all its ground floor equivalents, which were all directly underneath their second floor counterparts, which made it more duty than pride, because he hadn't bothered the day before. He had left the chair any old place it had wanted to be. Wherever it hung its hat was its home. But this new day was different. Somehow. The guy was acting like a nervous CEO ahead of a one-star's visit. Reacher waited. The shadows retreated yard by yard as the sun climbed higher. He heard the 7 o'clock train. It rolled in and vibrated and rolled out again. He waited. The drapes opened in room 203. The window was sideways to the sun, and like everything else, the glass was covered in crop dust. But even so, Reacher saw the guy clearly, in his suit, standing with his arms held wide, his hands still on the drapes, staring out at the morning as if in wonder, as if it was a big surprise the sun had come up again. As if it had been maybe 50-50 at best. The guy stood like that for a whole minute, and then he turned away and was lost to sight. A white sedan drove into the lot. A Cadillac, Reacher thought, but not new. It was from a previous generation. It was long and low, all road-hugging weight and boulevard ride. Like a limousine. Therefore, an unusual color outside of Florida or Arizona. An unusual sight, in any case, in farm country. It was the first sedan Reacher had seen in about 300 miles. It was pretty clean, recently rinsed, at least, if not actually washed. Reacher couldn't see the driver. The glass was too dark. The car swooped right and backed left, then reversed into the slot below room 203. It had no front license plate. The driver didn't get out. Above the car, room 203's door opened, and the man in the suit stepped out. He had the brown leather bag in his hand. He stood still for a long moment and did the air-sniffing thing, as if in wonder. Then he snapped out of his trance and headed for the stairs. Definitely gaunt, but light on his feet, and a fluent, fluid mover. Not muscle-bound like an athlete, but graceful like a dancer, or a stage actor. He came down the stairs, and the driver got out of the Cadillac to greet him. The driver was a man Reacher hadn't seen before. He was about 40, tall and well-built, not fat, but certainly fleshed out, with a full head of hair and a guileless face. Another junior executive, possibly. The man in the suit shook his hand and ducked into the back of the car. The driver carried the brown leather bag to the trunk and placed it inside like a little ceremony. Then he got back behind the wheel and the car pulled forward and drove away. No rear license plate either. Reacher went and took a shower. Chang was already in the diner at the corner two-top they had used before. She had her back to the wall. She had reserved the table next to her by hanging her coat on the chair. Reacher passed it back to her and sat down side by side with his own back to the wall, which was tactically sound, but a shame in every other way. Chang looked just fine in a t-shirt. Her hair was still damp, which made it look like ink. Her arms were long and faintly muscled, and her skin was smooth. She said, "The guy in the suit left already. He took his bag, so he isn't coming back. Lucky him."
"I saw," Reacher said, "from my room.
I was on my way back from the railroad. Kiever wasn't on the morning train."
"I'm sorry to hear that."
"So now's the time. No more waiting for him. I have to start looking for him. His room is 215. I peeked through the window. There's a big shirt hanging on a closet door. Room 213 is completely empty.
Okay. We'll get in somehow.
Oui.
Figure of speech, Reacher said. I have nothing else to do today.
Should we go do it now?
Let's eat first. Eat when you can. That's the golden rule.
Now could be a good time to do it.
Could be, but later will be better, when the maid has started work. She might open the door for us. The waitress came over with coffee. Chapter 11. After breakfast, they found the motel maid had indeed started work, but she was nowhere near Kiever's room. She was fully occupied on the other side of the horseshoe, making 203 ready to rent again after the man in the suit's departure. She had a big stacked cart on the walkway, and the room door was standing open. She was visible inside, stripping the bed. She would have a pass key on her belt or in her pocket or chained to her cart handle. Reacher said, I guess I'll walk over there and say hello. He turned left at 211 and left again at 206, and he stopped level with the cart and looked in 203's door. The maid was crying and working, both at the same time. She was a white woman, thin as a rail, no longer young, holding a sack of towels from the bathroom. She was bawling and sniveling, and tears were streaming down her face. From outside the room, Reacher said, Ma'am, are you okay? The woman stopped and let go of the sack and straightened up. She huffed and puffed and took a breath and stared blankly at Reacher, and then she turned and stared blankly in the mirror, and then she turned back again without a reaction, as if her appearance was already too far gone to worry about. She smiled. She said,
I'm very happy.
Okay.
No, really, I'm sorry, but the gentleman who just checked out left me a tip.
What, your first ever? She said,
My best ever.
She had a smock with a wide catch-all pocket on the bottom hem. She used both hands carefully and came out with an envelope, smaller than a regular letter, like a reply to a fancy invitation. On it the words, Thank you, were handwritten with a fountain pen. She flipped up the flap with her thumb and took out a $50 bill. Ulysses S. Grant, right there on the front.
$50, she said. The most I ever got before was $2.
Outstanding, Reacher said.
This is going to make such a big difference to me. You can't imagine.
I'm happy for you, Reacher said.
Thank you. I guess sometimes miracles happen.
Do you know why this town is called Mother's Rest? The woman paused a beat. She said,
Are you asking me, or are you going to tell me?
I'm asking you.
I don't know.
You never heard any stories?
About what?
About mothers, Reacher said. Resting? Either literally or figuratively?
No, she said. I never heard anything about that.
Can you let me into 215? The woman paused a beat. She said,
Are you the gentleman from 113 and 106 the night before?
Yes.
I can't open a room except for the registered occupant. I'm sorry.
It was a corporate booking. We all work together. We need to be in and out. It's a teamwork thing.
I could go check with the manager.
Don't worry about it, Reacher said. I'll go check with him myself. But the one-eyed guy wasn't in his office, an impromptu absence, clearly, because the desk looked like work had been interrupted recently and temporarily. Files and ledgers were open, and pens were dropped on notebooks, and there was a go cup of coffee that looked pretty warm. But the guy wasn't there. Behind the desk was a door in the wall. Private space, Reacher guessed. The sleeping couch, for sure, and maybe a kitchenette, and certainly at least a half-size bathroom, which was maybe where the guy was right then. Some things can't wait. Reacher listened hard and heard nothing. He stepped around the desk to the private side. He glanced at the ledgers, and the files, and the notebooks. Routine motel stuff, accounts, orders, to-do lists, percentages. He listened again, heard nothing. He opened a drawer where the guy kept the room keys. He put 113 in and took 215 out. He closed the drawer. He stepped back to the public side. He breathed out. The one-eyed guy didn't come back. Maybe he had a digestive disorder. Reacher turned around and strolled out of the office. He crossed the horseshoe and went up Chang's stairs. He showed her the key, and she asked,
"How long have we got it?"
He said, "As long as Kiva paid for. A week, probably. I'm taking over his room. The motel guy can't complain. He's had his money, and Kiva isn't here to express an opinion."
"Will that work?"
"It might, unless they get up a posse."
"In which case, we call 911, like Kiva should have."
"The guy in the suit left a $50 tip for the maid." "That's a lot of money. You give that for a week on a cruise ship." "She was very happy."
"She would be. It's like a free week's wages."
"Makes me feel bad. I never leave more than five."
"He was a rich man. You said so yourself."
Reacher said nothing and stepped up to Kiever's door. He put the key in the lock. He opened the door and stepped back and said, "After you." Chang went inside and Reacher followed. Evidence of Kiver was all over the room. The shirt on the doorknob, a neat travel kit in the bathroom, a linen jacket in the closet, a battered valise open against a wall full of clothes. Everything had been lined up with great precision by the maid. The room was clean and tidy. No briefcase, no computer bag, no fat notebooks, no handwritten pages. Not on open view, anyway. Reacher turned back and closed the door. He had searched maybe 100 motel rooms in his long and unglamorous career, and he was good at it. He had found all kinds of things in all kinds of places. He said, "What was Kiver before he joined the bureau?" Chang said,
"He was a police detective with a night school law degree."
Which meant he had searched motel rooms, too. Which meant he wouldn't have used anywhere obvious. He knew the tricks. Not that the room offered many opportunities. It was not architecturally complex. Chang said,
"We're fooling ourselves, surely. The motel clerk could have been in here half a dozen times already, or let someone else in. We have to assume this room was searched long ago."
Reacher nodded. "But how well? That's the question. Because we know one thing for sure. Kiver was in this room at one point, and then he left. He had three possible ways of leaving. First, he left on an innocent errand that turned bad later. Second, he was dragged out of here, kicking and screaming by persons unknown. Or third, he was sitting here on the bed, running things through his mind, and he made a sudden, random connection, like a real, oh shit, moment. And he stood up and hustled over to the payphone in the general store to call 911 without further ado. Except, he didn't make it."
"Didn't make it? What are you saying?"
"I'm saying the guy is missing. Tell me where and why, and I'll close down the other theories."
None of those three ways of leaving means we should expect to find something in this room. Something that everyone else missed.
No, I think the third one does. Just possibly. Imagine the moment.
Oh, shit.
You're stunned. And as of that split second, you're in grave danger. The danger is so bad you need to run straight for the phone. But you'll be exposed. This is not the same as using a cell behind a locked door. This is a walk in the open air, which carries a risk now. So maybe you're tempted to leave a marker behind. You scribble a note and you hide it. Then you go for the phone.
And don't make it.
That's what the math says. Sometimes.
But this note is hidden so well no one has found it. But not so well we won't find it. If there is a note at all. If it was the third of the three possibilities. If it wasn't something completely different.
It was a sequence, Reacher said. Had to be, right? It was two oh-shit moments. A small one, maybe the day before, after which he calls you for backup, and then the big one, after which he goes to call the cops.
After leaving a note.
I think it's worth considering.
When Reacher searched a room, he started with the room, not the contents. Hiders, and therefore seekers, tended to ignore the physical structure, which was often rich with possibility, especially for a sheet of paper. An under-window HVAC unit could be opened up, and 9 times out of 10 there was a plastic pocket expressly designed to hold paperwork, often an instruction manual or a warranty card, among which an enterprising person could conceal dozens of pages. Or, if there was forced air, heating and cooling, there would be grills, easily unscrewed. Pocket doors were good for hiding papers. Ceilings had removable panels for maintenance purposes. A folding door in a closet had an inside face no one ever saw. And so on. Only then came the furniture. In this case, a bed, 2 night tables, an upholstered chair, a dining chair at the desk itself, and a small chest of drawers. They looked everywhere, but they found nothing. Afterward, Chang said,
"Worth a try, I guess. In a way, I'm glad we didn't find anything. Makes it less final. I want him to be okay."
Reacher said, "I want him to be in Vegas with a 19-year-old, but until we get a postcard, we have to assume he isn't, just so we stay sharp."
"He was a cop and a special agent. How far is it from here to the general store? What could have happened?"
"It's about 200 feet, past the diner. Lots of things could have happened."
Chang didn't answer. Richard's hands felt dirty from moving furniture and touching surfaces not regularly cleaned. He stepped into the bathroom and flipped up the tap to wet his hands. The soap was a new cake, still wrapped in tissue paper, light blue, all pleated and stuck down with a gold label. Not the worst place Reacher had ever seen. He pulled off the paper and balled it up. The trash can was under the vanity. The vanity was deep. A kind of underhand through the slot change-up was required. Left-handed, too, which he executed. And then he washed his hands, the new soap hard at first and then better later. He dried his hands on a fresh towel, and then his conscience got the better of him, and he bent down to check his tissue paper spitball. He had, in fact, hit the target. It hadn't. The trash can was round, like a short cylinder, but it was jammed up in a left-hand corner, which meant there was a shallow space behind, the kind of space that got ignored, especially by maids with mops. Not for $2 tips. It was a kind of space that ended up the graveyard of errant throws. 3 of them. One was his own spitball.
He could tell by the dampness. One was an older version of the same thing, bone dry, a previous cake of soap, and one was a piece of furred paper, like junk from a pocket. Chapter 12. The paper was a stiff white square, about 3.5 inches on a side, with one gummed edge, a sheet from a memo block or cube. Reacher had seen such things before. It had been folded in four, and it had ridden in a pocket for a month or more. The folds were worn, and the corners had deteriorated, and the surfaces were rubbed. Reacher guessed it had been flicked toward the trash can, maybe two-fingered like a trick with a playing card, but it had sailed too far and hit the deck in no man's land. He unfolded it and smoothed it flat. What could be called the outer face was blank, just a rub of grime and faint indigo staining, probably from denim, from the back pocket of a pair of blue jeans, he thought. He turned the paper over. What could be called the inner face had writing on it. Ballpoint pen, a hurried note. A scrawl, really. There was a phone number and the words, 200 deaths. Reacher asked, is this Kiever's handwriting? Chang said, I don't know. I've never seen Kiever's handwriting, and it isn't a great sample, so we can't be certain. Think like a defense attorney. There's no unbroken chain of custody. Anyone could have left this here at any time. Sure, Reacher said. But suppose it's Kiever's. What would it be? B. A note, probably made during a phone call in his office. His spare bedroom, anyway. Maybe an initial contact or a follow-up call. High stakes with 200 deaths. And a phone number, which might be either the client or a source of independent corroboration or a source of further information. Why would he throw it away? Because later he wrote it up in longer form, so he didn't need it anymore. Maybe he was standing here at the mirror, checking himself over like people do. Maybe he dumped his old Kleenex and took new, and maybe he checked his other pockets at the same time. Maybe he hadn't used those pants for a while. The phone number's area code was 323, Reacher said. Los Angeles, right? Chang nodded and said, either a cell or a landline. 200 deaths. That would qualify as serious danger. If it's Kiever's, if it was about this current case, it could be anybody's, about anything. Who else would pass through here with 200 deaths on his mind? Who says they did? Even if it's Kiever's, it could have been an old case, or a different case, or it could have been a liability lawyer a year ago chasing ambulances. How could there even be 200 deaths here? That's 20% of the population. Someone would have noticed. You wouldn't need a private investigator. Let's call the number, Reacher said. Let's see who answers. Reacher locked up the room, and they went down the metal stairs. And 100 feet away, the one-eyed guy came out of his office and bustled across toward them, waving and gesturing. When he arrived, he said, excuse me, sir, but 215 is not your registered room. Reacher said, then amend your register. The room was paid for by an associate of ours, and I'm going to be using it until he returns.
You can't do that.
No such word.
How did you get the key?
I found it under a bush. Just lucky, I guess. This is not allowed.
Then call the cops, Reacher said.
The guy said nothing. He just huffed and puffed for a moment, and then he turned around and headed back without another word. Chang said,
Suppose he does call the cops?
He won't, Reacher said. He would have made a big point of telling us he was about to, yes, sir, right there and then. Plus, the cops are probably 50 miles away, or 100. They wouldn't come out for a room that was already paid for. Plus, if these people have something to hide, the last thing they'll do is call the cops.
What will he do instead?
I'm sure we'll find out. They stepped out to the wide street and walked past the front of the diner to the general store. The sun was up and the town was quiet. No activity and no big crowds. There was a pickup truck 50 yards ahead making a turn into a side street. There was a kid throwing a tennis ball against a wall and hitting the rebound with a stick like baseball practice. He was pretty good. Maybe he should have his picture in a magazine. There was a FedEx truck crossing the rails on the old trail and heading into town. The general store was a classic rural building, a plain, flat-roofed structure end on to the street, with a fancy gabled frontage made of lap boards painted dull red. There was a sign painted in circus letters colored gold. Mother's Rest Dry Goods. There was a single door and a single window, which was small and purely for light rather than for the display of tempting goods. The glass was covered with decals, all with names Reacher didn't know. Brand names, he assumed, for arcane but vital country stuff. Inside the door was a boxed-in vestibule, which had a payphone mounted on the wall. No acoustic hood, just the instrument itself, all metal, including the cord. Chang fed coins in the slot and dialed. She listened for a spell, and then she hung up without speaking. She said,
"Voicemail. The phone company's standard announcement, not personalized. No name. Sounded like a cell phone."
Reacher said, "You should have left a message."
"No point. I can't get calls here."
"Try Kiever again, just in case."
"I don't want to. I don't want to hear him not answer."
"He's either okay or he isn't. Calling him or not calling him doesn't change anything."
She used her own cell to look up the number, but she dialed on the older technology. As before, she listened for a spell, and then she hung up without speaking. She tried a second number. Same result. She shook her head. She said,
"No answer."
Reacher said, "We should go to Oklahoma City." Chapter 13. The train would have been faster, but its departure was still 8 hours away, so they drove in Chang's rental car. It was a compact Ford SUV, green in color. Inside it was bland and unmarked, and it smelled strongly of upholstery shampoo. They were out of town within a minute, on the old wagon train trail, and then they turned south and west and south again, through the immense checkerboard of endless golden fields, until they found a county road that promised a highway entrance 200 miles ahead. Chang was driving, in her T-shirt. Reacher had the passenger seat racked back, and he was watching her. She had one hand low on the wheel, and the other was resting in her lap. Her eyes were always moving, to the road ahead, to the mirrors, back to the road ahead. Sometimes she half smiled briefly, and then half grimaced as thoughts ran through her head. Her shoulders were rolled forward an inch in a tiny hunch, which Reacher took to mean she wanted to be a smaller person, which ambition he could not endorse. She looked exactly the right size to him. She was long-limbed and solid, but not where she shouldn't be. "I think I'm a nice person, but I know I'm not the reason." He said nothing. She looked in the mirror again, and she said,
"There's a pickup truck behind us."
He said, "How far back?"
"About 100 yards.
How long has it been there?"
"A mile or so."
"It's a public road."
"It came on real fast, but now it's hanging back. Like it was looking for us, and now it's found us."
"Just one?"
"That's all I can see."
"Not much of a posse."
2 men, I think. A driver and a passenger."
Reacher didn't want to turn around to look. Didn't want to show either guy the pale flash of a concerned face in the rear window. So he hunched down a little and moved sideways until he could see the image in Chang's door mirror. A pickup truck about 100 yards back. A Ford, he thought. A serious machine, big and obvious, keeping pace. It was dull red like the general store. There were 2 guys in it, side by side, but far from each other because of the vehicle's extravagant width. Reacher sat up again and looked through the windshield. Wheat to the right, wheat to the left, and the road running dead straight ahead until it fell below the far horizon. The shoulders were graveled for drainage, but there were no ditches, no turns either. The fields were endless, almost literally. Maybe the same field ran all the way to the highway ramp, 200 miles. It looked possible. There were no other cars in sight. He said, "Did you train for this stuff at Quantico?" She said,
"To a certain extent, but a long time ago, and in a different environment, mostly urban, with traffic lights and 4-way stops and 1-way streets. We don't have many options here. Did you train for it?"
"Nah, I was never any good at driving."
"Should we let them make the first move?"
"First, we need to figure out what they've been told to do. If it's surveillance only, we can lead them all the way to Oklahoma City and lose them there. The only fights you truly win are the ones you don't have."
"What if it's not surveillance only?"
"Then they'll do it like the movies. They'll bump us from behind."
"To scare us? Or worse than that?"
"That would be a very big step for them to take."
"They'll make it look like an accident. Tourist lady fell asleep on the long straight road and crashed. I'm sure it happens all the time."
Reacher said nothing.
"We can't outrun them," Chang said. "Not in this thing."
"So let them get close, and then switch to the other lane and hit the brakes. Send them on ahead."
"When?"
"Don't ask me," Reacher said. "I failed defensive driving. I lasted less than a day. They made me go qualify on something else. When they get big in the mirror, I guess." Chang drove on, two-handed now. 1 minute, 2, she said.
"I want to see their moves. We need to force their hand."
"You sure?"
"They're the home team. We need to shake them up."
"Okay. Speed up a bit." She hit the gas, and he turned around and stared out the back window, the pale flash of a concerned face. He said, "Faster." The little green Ford jumped ahead almost 200 yards, and then the pickup reacted, and its grill rose up and it came charging closer. Chang said,
"Give me a real-time distance countdown. I can't judge in the mirrors."
"They're at 80 yards now," Reacher said, "which gives us about 8 seconds.
"Less, because I'm going to slow down. This thing might tip over."
60 yards.
"Okay, I'm clear ahead."
"And behind. It's just the 2 of us on the road." 40 yards.
"I'm slowing some more. We can't do this over 60.
20 yards.
"I'm going to do it at 10 yards.
"Okay. "Now, do it now." And she did. She swerved left and braked hard, and the pickup came within an inch of clipping her right back corner, but it missed, and it sped on ahead, braking hard, but
much later. Meanwhile, the little green four did a lot of side-to-side rocking and tipping, but soon enough it was stopped dead, safe, back in the correct lane, 100 yards behind the pickup truck, their relative positions completely inverted after a noisy few seconds. Chang said,
"Of course this begs the fairly obvious question, what now? We turn around, they turn around, and then they're chasing us all over again."
"Drive straight at them," Reacher said.
"And crash?"
"I saw as an option." But the pickup moved first. It turned around in the road and came back toward them, but very slowly, just creeping along, barely more than idle speed, which Reacher took as a message, like a white flag. "They want to talk," he said. "They want to do this face to face." The truck stopped 10 yards ahead, and both doors opened. Two men climbed out, sturdy individuals, both about 6 feet and 200 pounds, both somewhere in their middle 30s, both with mirrored sunglasses, both with thin cotton jackets over T-shirts. They looked cautious but confident, like they knew what they were doing, like they were the home team. Chang said,
"They must be armed. They wouldn't be doing it this way otherwise."
"Possible," Reacher said. The two men took up position in the middle of the no man's land between the two vehicles. One was on the left of the center line, and one was on the right. They stood easy, just waiting, hands by their sides. Reacher said,
"Run them over." "I can't do that."
"Okay, I guess I'll go see what they want. Any problems, take off for Oklahoma City without me, and best of luck."
"No, don't get out. It's too dangerous."
"For me or for them? They're just a couple of country boys."
"We should assume they have guns."
"But only temporarily."
"You're nuts."
"Maybe," Reacher said. "But never forget it was Uncle Sam who made me this way. I passed every other course, except driving." He opened his door and stepped out. Chapter 14. The little green Ford had regular front-hinged doors, like most cars, and the doors had a restraint about two-thirds of the way through their travel, so stepping out meant stepping back, too, which improved Reacher's angle. It put the engine block between him and the two guys. If they drew down immediately and started shooting from the get-go, he could hit the deck behind the bulletproof shield, if they had guns, which was not proven. Except even if they did, he couldn't imagine why they would start shooting from the get-go, which was gone anyway. They could have fired through the windshield. That was the real get-go, unless they wanted to preserve the car for a convincing accident. It would be hard to explain bullet holes in the glass if the tourist lady had merely fallen asleep at the wheel, in which case, how would they explain bullet holes in the dead passenger? And they would have to get his body back in the car, which wouldn't be easy. He would be a lot of dead weight. He figured they weren't going to shoot, if they had guns. He said, "Guys, you've got 30 seconds, so go ahead and state your case." The guy on the right folded his arms high across his chest like a bouncer at a nightclub door, a show of support, Reacher figured, for the other guy, who was presumably the spokesperson. The other guy said, "It's about the motel." His hands were still by his sides. Reacher said, "What about it?"
"That's our uncle who runs it. He's a poor old handicapped man, and you're giving him a hard time. You're breaking all kinds of laws."
His hands were still by his sides. Reacher stepped out from behind the door and moved up next to the Ford's right-hand headlight.
He could feel the heat from the engine. He said,
"What laws am I breaking?"
"You're in another guest's room who isn't using it right now." "Doesn't matter."
His hands were still by his sides. Reacher took a step and another until he was level with the Ford's left-hand headlight, but much further forward on a diagonal, which put him 10 feet from the two guys in a narrow triangle in no man's land. The guy with the folded arms on one corner and the spokesperson on another, and Reacher all alone at the thin end. The guy on the left said,
"So we're here to collect the key."
Reacher took another step. Now he was 7 feet away. Now they were in an intimate little cluster, no other cars in sight. The wheat moved slowly in waves, like an immense golden sea. Reacher said,
"I'll return the key when I check out."
The guy on the left said,
"You're already checked out, as of right now,
and you won't get a room if you come back again. Management
reserves the right to refuse admission."
Reacher said nothing.
The guy on the left said,
"And there's nowhere else in Mother's Rest.
My uncle's place is the only game in town."
"You, getting the message?"
Reacher said,
"Why is it called Mother's Rest?"
"I don't know."
"Where is the message coming from?
Purely your uncle or the other thing?"
"What other thing?"
"Something I heard about."
"There is no other thing."
"Good to know," Reacher said. "Tell your uncle no laws have been broken. Tell him he's been paid for the room. Tell him I'll see him later."
The guy on the right uncrossed his arms. The guy on the left said,
"Are you going to be a problem?"
"I'm already a problem," Reacher said. "The question is, what are you going to do about it?"
There was a pause, hot and lonely in the middle of nowhere, and then the two guys answered by brushing aside their coats in tandem, casually, right-handed, both thereby showing black semi-automatic pistols in pancake holsters mounted on their belts. Which was a mistake, and Reacher could have told them why. He could have launched into a long and impatient classroom lecture about sealing their fates by forcing a decisive battle too early, about short-circuiting a grander strategy by moving the end game to the beginning. Threats had to be answered, which meant he was going to have to take their guns away, because probing pawns had to be sent back, beaten, and because folks in Mother's Rest needed to know for sure the next time he came to town, he would be armed. He wanted to tell them it was their own fault. He wanted to tell them they had brought it on themselves. But he didn't tell them anything. Instead, he ducked his own hand under his own coat, grabbing at nothing but air. But the two guys didn't know that, and like the good, range-trained shooters they were, they went for their guns and dropped into solid shooting stances all at once, which braced their feet a yard apart for stability. So Reacher stepped in and kicked the left-hand guy full in the groin before the guy's gun was even halfway out of its holster, which meant the right-hand guy had time to get his all the way out, but to no avail, because the next event in his life was the arrival of Reacher's elbow, scything backhand against his cheekbone, shattering it, and causing a general lights out everywhere. Reacher stepped back, and then he checked on the first guy, who was preoccupied, like most guys he had kicked in the groin. The guns were Smith & Wesson Sigma 40s, which were modern park polymer weapons and expensive. They were both fully loaded. Both guys had wallets in their hip pockets, with about $100 between them, which Reacher took as spoils of war. Their driver's licenses both showed the last name Moynihan, which meant they could indeed be brothers or cousins with an uncle in common.
One had been christened John and the other Stephen. Richard carried the guns back to the little green Ford. Chang's window was down. He put one gun in his pocket and passed the other to Chang. She took it a little reluctantly. He asked, "Did you hear any of what they said?" Chang said,
"All of it."
"Conclusions?"
"They might have been telling the truth. The motel might have been their only beef. On the other hand, it might not."
"I vote not," Reacher said. "The room has been paid for. Why get so uptight?"
"You could have been killed."
Reacher nodded. "Many times," he said, "but all long ago. Not today. Not by these guys."
"You're crazy."
"Or competent."
"So now what?"
Reacher glanced back. The guy on the right was about to transition from unconscious to concussed. The guy on the left was squirming half-heartedly and pawing at everything between his ribcage and his knees. Reacher said, "Shoot them if they move." He walked 10 yards to their truck and climbed in. The glove compartment had registration and insurance in the name of Stephen Moynihan. There was nothing else of interest in the cab. He got straightened up behind the wheel and put the truck in gear. He steered for the shoulder and parked, straddling the gravel, with the left-hand wheels safely out of the traffic lane and the right-hand wheels deep in the wheat and the nose pointing back toward town. He shut it down and pulled the key. He dragged the guys, one by one, into the shade ahead of the front bumper and sat them up against the chrome. Both were awake by that point. He said, "Watch carefully now." And when he had their attention, he took their key and balanced it on his palm and tossed it underhand into the field. 40 or 50 feet. It would take them an hour to find, even under the best of circumstances, even after they were operational again, which might be a supplementary hour all by itself. Then he walked back and got in the Ford, and Chang drove on. From time to time, he turned around and checked the view. The parked truck stayed visible for a long time, dwindling to a tiny, dull pinprick in the far distance, and then it fell below the northern horizon and was lost to sight. It took nearly 3 more hours to get to the highway, and then the distance markers promised another 2 to Oklahoma City. The drive was uneventful until a point about 90 minutes out when all kinds of chiming and beeping started coming from the phone in Chang's pocket, voicemails and text messages and emails, all patiently stored and now downloading. Cell service was back.